This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Earlier this month, an anti-immigration activist group that calls itself the Minutemen grabbed headlines when they took it upon themselves to patrol a part of Arizona's border with Mexico. Despite a paltry turnout, they succeeded in thrusting immigration issues back into the spotlight. Members of Congress have also taken up the issue. In February, a provision known as Real ID passed in the House of Representatives. It would impose federal standards on driver's licenses and also make it harder for emigres to seek asylum. It would also clear the way for an extension of a barrier along the border near San Diego. Today, the Senate voted down a proposal from Republican Larry Craig that would have granted illegal farm workers the right to citizenship in a couple of phases, but it's yet unclear whether the House and Senate can agree on an immigration bill. It's been decades since Congress passed a comprehensive reform, and some states are beginning to craft legislation of their own on issues like driver's licenses for undocumented workers. Meanwhile, of course, foreigners continue to flock to the U.S. border. Later in the program, a conversation with paramedics who were at the scene of the Oklahoma City bombing 10 years ago. But first, immigration reform. Do you think it's time for Congress to take action to tighten the borders or to protect undocumented workers? If your state is taking up the immigration issue, give us a call. We'd also like to hear from immigrants who may be affected by congressional proposals. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. And we begin with Seth Stern, a reporter for Congressional Quarterly magazine who's been following this issue. And he was kind enough to join us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
And let's begin with what happened on the Senate floor today, the defeat of Senator Craig's bill that was dubbed Ag Jobs. Did that come as a surprise?
Well, there were two amendments to the supplemental spending bill. One was by Senator Craig, another was by Senator Chambliss. Neither had the support to get 60 amendments. It was a technical need to they invoked cloture, which means you need 60 votes for it to proceed, and neither had enough votes to move forward.
And remind us, you mentioned that this is attached to a supplemental spending bill. This is to pay for expenditures for troops in Iraq and Afghanistan.
That's right. This is a supplemental appropriations bill, primarily for the military, also for the tsunami relief efforts. But immigration has become a part of it.
Just before the end of the previous session of Congress, James Sensenbrenner of Wisconsin, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, got an agreement from the House leadership to attach his bill, Real ID, to a must-pass measure. That is the appropriations bill, and his Real ID measure is attached to the bill as it came out of the House of Representatives.
That's right. That's how this all happened. Sensenbrenner got the pledge from House Republican leaders. His bill got attached in the House, and then in the Senate, they said, well, immigration's fair game. Why shouldn't we be able to attach our priorities?
And so Senator Craig from Idaho proposed his amendment. Barbara Mikulski of Maryland has also been agitating for an amendment to provide exemptions, more visa exemptions for workers to work in the crab-picking industry on Maryland's eastern shore.
Yeah, her bill affects temporary seasonal workers. Would raise the cap. It's now at 66,000 workers. She and other senators from states that have seafood and tourism say all the visas are gone. They don't have the workers that those places need for the summer season.
And all of this, as Senator Frist, the majority leader in the United States Senate, has shown reluctance to take up the issue of immigration and attach it to this amendment at all, to the expenditures at all.
Senator Frist has made clear that he doesn't want immigration provisions, either the House ones or the ones being considered in the Senate, on the bill. On the other hand, though, he has not made a commitment that in conference, when the House and the Senate come together, that he'll fight to keep off the House provisions.
And this is two fundamentally different views of these immigration measures. The House bill treats the Real ID measure, that treats these issues as an issue of national security, as an issue of border control. And as we've been talking about Senator Craig and Senator Mikulski, they're talking about supply of workers for industries in their states.
There are definitely two schools of thought. One treats immigration, particularly illegal immigration, as a law enforcement problem, and then after September 11th as a homeland security problem. On the other side are those who consider this a labor and employment issue. But there are also some deep divisions within the Republican Party.
And those are on these two issues?
How you see them breaking down, you do have a part of the House, particularly in the House, a group of Republicans led by Congressman Tancredo of Colorado, who kind of from the law and order perspective believe anything that would benefit people who came to this country illegally is wrong.
A form of amnesty, as he saw it.
Exactly. On the other hand, you have members of Congress, both Republicans and Democrats, who see a need for workers in this country, who are sympathetic to the needs of those who come, or it's sympathetic for the needs of the employers who want to bring them in and employ them.
And there are some 10 million here already. That's an estimate. Nobody really knows how many. Now, President Bush had called for a guest worker program. Has he outlined specifics of what he's talking about? Would it be in line with what Senator Craig wanted?
Well, Senator Craig's is focused specifically on agricultural workers. The president has spoken in general terms about a much broader guest worker program in which those workers would be allowed to work in any industry or field. That hasn't moved forward. The president really hasn't given the specifics. He's left it up to Congress to define it for him.
We're talking about proposals to change immigration laws in this country. If you'd like to join the conversation, it's 800-989-8255. 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN at NPR.org. Our guest is Seth Stern, a reporter for Congressional Quarterly. And let's begin with Richard. And Richard's calling from Red Bluff in California.
Hi. Yes, I do safety training for farm workers, and I speak Spanish. I worked with farm workers all my life. And I know the importance of you know, having them. And what I'm really concerned about is the fact that the United States depends on having our food supply, and we're competing against other countries that are paying workers what per day what we're paying per hour. And if we can't afford to keep our food supply here, I think it leaves us very weak politically that if we have to import our food and import our oil, countries could come in somewhere down the road and say, we're going to embargo you. You can't have food and oil unless you do what we want.
So the cheap labor then is vital to this industry, and you're suggesting, in a sense, by extension, vital to our national security.
That's true, yes. And I find them all to be very hard workers and very good people.
Seth?
The truth is that there are a large number of industries that are highly dependent on illegal immigration, whether it's agriculture of perishable fruits and picking, the processing of poultry and meats, landscaping, construction, the hospitality industry. Large numbers of illegal immigrants are working in all of those areas.
Richard, go ahead. I'm sorry, Richard?
Oh, okay. No, I was just going to say, yeah, that's very true, that they're necessary in many places. And the thing I find from the farmers I work with is we can't hire people to do these kind of jobs where the Mexicans are very willing to do them. And they try to hire other workers and are just not available that want to do this kind of work for the wages that can be paid competing with their countries.
I wonder, what kind of wages do they make? Do they make the minimum wage?
Yeah, they all make, all the ones I'm familiar with are, you know, up $8 an hour, some of them with benefits, some of them more than that. But the main thing is they're willing to do it. They're willing to get out in the sun and you know, do hard work and things that are necessary in agriculture, particularly with row crops and lettuce. And, you know, I work more with orchards where it's a little bit less labor-intensive with the pruning. They're just, you know, most growers would say, I've tried to hire people that other than them, and they just don't want to work that hard.
Okay, Richard, thanks very much. Seth, you were going to say?
There's certainly a debate among labor economists whether the presence of illegal immigrants are suppressing the wages of low-wage Americans, particularly low-skill and African-Americans in cities. I mean, these are dirty, they're dangerous often jobs that Americans don't want. But without illegal immigrations, the question is, would the wages in these jobs be higher and Americans would take the work?
Let's get another caller. This is Brandy. Brandy's calling from Murray, Kentucky.
Yes. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a third-generation Mexican-American. You can't tell by my voice, but because I live in Kentucky. But my grandfather had nothing when he came to this country. He was an illegal immigrant. And my father was born here, and he grew up most of his life cutting along the California coast working the produce there, and he eventually would work his way up to Washington in the summer and cut down trees when he wasn't in school. And I definitely think there needs to be more regulation on this sort of thing, because I know many children in my family and in many other places, children are doing a lot of this labor. And a 15-year-old can work up to 14 hours in a field. But if they wanted to work in an air-conditioned store, they wouldn't be able to have a job there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's a definite double standard, and there needs to be a lot more regulation on this so that abuses like that don't happen.
How common are those kinds of abuses that Brandy's talking about, Sam?
I think on every side of this debate, you hear people say that this is not a system that works. The system is broken. We're not doing a good job of keeping illegal immigrants out of the country. They are needed here, and there's not a real incentive for employers to avoid hiring them because we're not enforcing immigration laws in the interior of the country. So certainly there's a problem. Everyone acknowledges that.
And talk it to us. We just have a few seconds left in this segment, but the enforcement on employers, as you say, this is not enforced, and this is not the focus of any of these reform proposals.
That's true, and any expert you speak to says a real comprehensive approach needs to look at the issue of employer enforcement and sanctions for those who hire illegal immigration, if that's what the country wants to do, limit illegal immigration.
If that's what the country wants to do. I guess that's the debate we're in now.
I don't necessarily think that's the direction the country needs to take either. I mean, like they've said before, nobody else wants these jobs, and Mexicans can do them and do them well.
Brandy, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate
it. You have a good day.
After a short break, we're going to continue to talk about attempts to change U.S. immigration laws and take more of your calls. Our phone number again, 800-989-8255. You can also send us email, totn@npr.org. Back after the break, I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, and we're talking about proposals to reform the nation's immigration laws. Our guest is Seth Stern of Congressional Quarterly, and, of course, you're invited to join us. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, our email address, totn@npr.org. Joining us now is Congressman David Dreyer, Chairman of the House Rules Committee. Congressman Dreyer, good to talk with you again.
Hey, it's nice to be with you, Neil, and I'm still looking forward to having you come up here for a visit.
Oh, I'll look forward to that as well. But I did want to ask you about the Real ID bill that was approved by the House of Representatives. Do you see this primarily as a national security issue, homeland security?
Neil, it's very important for us to make a distinction between border security, national security, and immigration reform. And I think that we've tried to make that distinction. I was one of the negotiators on the 9/11 implementation bill last year, and mm-hmm. Seth obviously remembers that very well. When we in the House, by an overwhelming margin, included the provisions which basically said that states that provided driver's licenses to people who are here illegally could not have those driver's licenses used for any federal purpose, meaning entering a courthouse, using it to get on board an airplane, using it to apply for any kind of federal program. We also included in that measure the completion of a 3.5-mile gap in the 14-mile border fence that extends from the Pacific Ocean to what's called the Otay Mesa near San Diego because of an environmental concern, when in fact the gap itself is creating a real environmental devastation to what's called the Tijuana Estuary. And these are provisions which we believe are really tied to border security and not immigration reform. So you're right, Neil, in saying that we want to focus on national security. I believe also that it's very important for us to put into place a counterfeit-proof Social Security card, which I've introduced as H.R. 98. And the reason it's H.R. 98, Neil, is that according to T.J. Bonner, the president of the National Border Patrol Council, said that it would reduce by 98% the number of illegal border crossings. Why? Because if the word were to get out that you can't get a job unless you have a tamper-proof Social Security card, it would diminish by 98% the number of illegal border crossings, and then the Border Patrol could focus their attention on ensuring that a terrorist does not enter the United States. So we've got a number of provisions focused on border security, and then the issue of immigration reform. And frankly, I believe that if I were to be able to put into place the counterfeit-proof Social Security card, which simply would have information, it's not a national ID card, by the way, it would simply have the information that the government already has as to what someone's status is here in the country and a photo on it. But if that existed, we must have a guest worker program that goes hand in hand with it, because we know there's an economic demand that exists in this country. So that's part of the immigration reform issue, which I support, but border security is what we're focusing on now.
Well, as you know, the Association of Governors, the state legislatures, they're all opposed to this measure.
Well, I don't want to say that they're all opposed to it. I know there are concerns about it. And frankly, we don't want to in any way impinge on states' rights here, but we are saying that if driver's licenses are used for federal purposes, that they should be granted to people who are citizens.
It would be okay if in the state of Utah they're now issuing driver permissions as opposed to driver's licenses. That would be okay under this law?
Of course. I mean, it's just that those driver permissions, that structure could not be used for any federal purpose. That's why, I say to governors and state legislators who raise concern about this, we're not saying to a state what it is that you have to do. We're only saying what it is that you have to do as it relates to our level of government, which is the federal government.
Let's get another caller on the line, and this is John. John's calling us from Mesa, Arizona.
Hello. I'm a building contractor out here in Arizona, and I'm just calling to say that it's almost impossible to find anybody to even do any work out here in this state other than the Mexicans.
Are you talking about illegal border?
Yeah. I think if they were to find a way to keep them off from work, and this whole state would just come to a screeching halt.
John is not alone, Congressman Dreyer.
That's the reason. What was the last thing I just said, Neil? And that is the fact that we must have a temporary guest worker program that goes hand in hand with this. There are reports that we have between 9 and 21 million people in this country illegally today. None of us like the fact that there are all these people who are here illegally. If we were to have some kind of temporary worker program, it would be in our national security interest to see them come out of the shadows and have an opportunity to work here. And what many people who are here illegally want to do, Neil, and that is they want to have the chance to go home. Many of them don't go home today. Why? Because they're afraid that this contractor in Mesa, Arizona's area is the desert below Mesa, Arizona there, that they will die trying to get back to work. And so many people stay here not because they want to stay here, because they're afraid they'll either die or have to pay a coyote, one of these people who brings people illegally into the country, too much. So we must have, I strongly support the notion of some kind of temporary worker program. I don't know exactly what shape is going to take. And like the president, I don't want to see amnesty granted, meaning putting people, making them American citizens. But I do think we have to come to some kind of compromise that will allow us to make sure that this contractor and others have a workforce, have the help that they need so that they can keep the economy going here.
John, go ahead.
Right. Most of them, they don't want to stay here permanently. A lot of them want to go back home.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
They're here work, and then they go home. They got a house in Mexico. They got a place down here. And we're stuck in a kind of a rock in a hard spot, because what do we do as contractors when we got jobs we need to get done and we just can't find anybody to do it?
Well, would you agree, John, that a guest worker program would be helpful?
Oh, it'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Congressman Dreyer, if a guest worker program needs to go hand in hand with Real ID, how come they're both not part of the same bill?
I didn't say Real ID, Neil. What I said is Real ID is focused simply on border security. It needs to go hand in hand with My HR 98, a counterfeit-proof Social Security card. Now, John, the construction worker right now, under the law, is required to ask for documentation from someone seeking a job, birth certificates, driver's licenses, passports, whatever. With our counterfeit-proof Social Security card, it will actually be easier, because there will be a card swipe that they can use or calling a toll-free number to find out what someone's status is. So it actually, the counterfeit-proof Social Security card will make it easier for employers in this country, and it also will, again, going hand in hand with a guest worker program, allow these people to come out of the shadows and allow us to have a workforce, and it'll allow them to do what John just said they want to do. Be with their families back in Mexico, but be here
to work. It would be more apt to sign up for something like that, too, and plus we could track them more easily.
That's right. So it's in our national security interest.
John, thanks very much for the phone call.
Okay, thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Seth Stern, I wanted to bring you in on this. So what are the prospects for Congressman Dreyer's bill?
Unfortunately, for his sake, I would say not great, in the sense that it's been 20 years since the last major immigration overhaul in 1986. It included an employer sanction and enforcement effort, and it didn't work out well. There hasn't been a lot of interest politically since then. A lot of the interest groups, you know, the truth is they want access to cheap labor, and they're not crazy about a bill that's going to make it harder for them to get it.
You know, if I could just interject here, Seth and Neil, I want to tell you that it's fascinating. A lot of people have said, oh, business would not go for this. You know, this is my 25th year of having the honor of representing California in the United States Congress. I have never had a single company or individual business man or woman say to me, we need to make sure that we keep these illegal workers here. Now, I saw the story about Tom Nassif, the former ambassador to Morocco, who is going to be coming in to see me, who's the head of the Western Growers, piece in the Wall Street Journal a few weeks ago, in which he talked about during lettuce picking season the need to make sure that they have the workforce. I acknowledge that they need a workforce, but I do think that if you look at the lack of enforcement that we've had since the 1986 Immigration Reform and Control Act was passed, we need to realize that people they get nothing more than a slap on the wrist. And one of the things that just made my blood boil was when the report in Time magazine came out about Tyson's Foods going to Mexico and recruiting people in Mexico to illegally come and work in their plants. And so, we are building bipartisan support for this. And by the way, I will tell you, Seth, that my colleague, Congressman Sylvester Reyes, who was the chairman of the Hispanic Caucus, a prominent Democrat, has joined as the lead co-sponsor on the other side of the aisle for this. And we're working, you know, this is the only piece of legislation. I mean, Tom Tancredo, who is a very, very outspoken opponent of illegal immigration, is one who's joined as a co-sponsor of this. And we have other members of the Hispanic caucus. So, what Seth just said, I acknowledge, is conventional wisdom on this. But I do believe that with the hue and cry out there that we are trying to, on this issue, because that's why we're on your program, talking to the nation, talking about it, I do think that there's an interest in doing something here. And at least this is a positive, bipartisan approach to what is a very serious problem.
Let's get another caller on the line. We'll talk with Bill. Bill's calling from Cambridge, Ohio.
Hi, very glad to get on the program. Just a very brief comment. I'd like to say that the rule of law is important. We should not, that's the basis of everything, and it is not something that should be ignored. And someone who enters this country illegally is a lawbreaker. Now, certainly if we can have a guest worker program and it can be done within the rules that are set up, that's fine and dandy. But as far as I'm concerned, if someone enters this country illegally, they are a lawbreaker like any other lawbreaker and should be deported without question.
Even if they've been here for many years?
Even if they're here many years, if they're illegal, they're still... If we have someone that breaks another law and we catch them after a number of years, we don't reward them, do we?
There could be a statute of limitations on many laws, but I think we get your point. Congressman Dreyer?
Well, this is obviously a tough issue. Clearly, people who do enter this country are doing so illegally. But the fact is, this notion of rounding up to 21 million people and sending them back to their country of origin, which, as you correctly say, Neil, if they've been here for many, many years, I mean, think about this, their children, if someone has been here for 20 years and their children were either very young when they came into the country or were born here, what is the country of origin for a two-year-old who was brought, you know, he had no control over it, across the border by his parents? And so I will say this is a tough, tough issue. It's not an easy one. And I don't believe we should reward in any way illegal behavior. That's why we're careful to say that we don't want people to get amnesty. And again, I interpret amnesty as being something that would allow people to become American citizens. So the caller has just correctly pointed to the challenge that we face. But again, on national security, identifying these 9 to 21 million people is in our interest to make sure that we are a safe and secure country.
Congressman Dreyer, we thank you for joining us today.
Always good to be with you, Neil. Thank you, Seth.
Thank you.
David Dreyer is a chairman of the House Rules Committee. He represents a district in California, and he joined us by phone from his office here in Washington, D.C. We're discussing proposals to change immigration, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Many Democrats have come out against the Real ID bill, among them Texas Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee, ranking member of the House Subcommittee on Immigration, Border Security, and Claims. And she's with us now by phone from New York City. Congresswoman, nice of you to be with us today.
Thank you, Neil. Seth, how are you?
Why is Real ID not a good proposal for America?
The basis of the opposition to Real ID is that this is a patchwork of, if you will, stigmatizing immigrants as opposed to looking at it comprehensively. Some of the elements of the Real ID bill are contravening the 9/11 bill that was passed in the last session. For example, the elements about a driver's license did not take into account the many, many different states and law enforcement who look toward the driver's license as a way of making sure that the highways and freeways are safe. It burdens the states to have a two-pronged driver's license, one for individuals who are of a legal status and that's a citizen, and others who have a legal permanent residence.
So it would be up to the DMV in New York City or in Texas to determine who's legal and who isn't.
Absolutely, and of course that means that you set a purely federal responsibility on the state. In addition, the Real ID bill, most people are not aware of, moves forward on the building of a fence that is already being built under federal law and local jurisdiction in California. And what this legislation does is relieve the builders of particular fence, which is supposed to be a border fence, of any compliance with any labor laws, civil rights laws, environmental laws. And they did it in opposition to many in the particular state in question, which happens to be California. The other aspect of the bill, it sets bounty hunters, who I have a great respect for, it's a profession, it's a small business, to make immigration decisions as well. If you think they're going to abscond as a bounty hunter, and a small business, you can pick them up. Is the bounty hunter going to be trained in immigration law? I don't think so. It also moves us closer to what we call a national ID card, which really was not promoted by the 9/11 Commission. And the last point, of course, is that it failed to do comprehensive immigration reform. What are we going to do with the 8 to 14 million individuals who happen to be undocumented, who are working, who have families, who have homes, and yet we have not provided a pathway for accessing legalization except for our response to the agricultural worker, and that's not the totality of the problem. We need comprehensive reform. We need a Homeland Security initiative, Neil, that speaks for itself, meaning that how can you be serious about security and immigration when the 9/11 Commission asked for 2,000 Border Patrol agents and your budget provides for 210? That's the administration. It asked for 800 per year ICE agents. Those are the internal enforcers, if you will, on immigration laws, and we provide 143, meaning the administration provides that in its budget. So my question to the administration and to the Republican majority, why don't we do immigration reform in a bipartisan way? Let's answer all the questions. Security on our northern and southern border, the access to legalization that will help the 8 to 14 million here that are not criminals who could access legalization, and, of course, why burden the states with responsibilities that they can ill afford?
I'm afraid we just have a minute or so with you left, but the competition from these workers, it's causing a lot of problems for some workers.
Well, I have a comprehensive immigration reform bill that I'll be filing shortly, and I totally agree that, first of all, the American worker is priority. What I would propose, one, is strong employer sanctions, but more importantly, I would propose that the fees on documenting these undocumented aliens who happen to have jobs, who are not going to participate in the president's program because they require them to leave, can be utilized, one, to train American workers in alternative work, and to look for opportunities to create work for American workers. I don't want to abandon the American worker. They are competitive, but they're competitive for jobs that we have found that most American workers are not utilizing at this time.
Congresswoman Lee, thanks very much for being with us today. We appreciate your time. Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee, a Democrat from Texas, ranking member on the House Subcommittee on Immigration, Border Security, and Claims. And she joined us by phone, as you could hear, apparently in a vehicle of some sort in New York City. We certainly hope she wasn't driving. We'll be back after a short break. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Now we're going to continue our discussion about immigration reform, and joining us is Seth Stern of Congressional Quarterly. And before the break, Seth, we were speaking with two members of Congress, different parties, each talking about the ideas of various reforms. Is there indeed much appetite in the Congress for any comprehensive reform of immigration at this point?
I think there's widespread recognition of a problem and the need for some sort of comprehensive solution. But you have a real division within the Republican Party of the law and order crowd and a crowd that wants to make sure there's enough workers for business. And those two sides really can't reconcile their differences. And that's why there's been no movement in the Republican-controlled Congress.
As we mentioned earlier, some states are beginning to craft immigration legislation of their own. The state of Utah recently passed a law that takes driver's licenses away from undocumented workers and instead grants them driving privilege cards. Joining us to tell us more about this new law is Jennifer Sanchez, a reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune, and she's with us from her office in Salt Lake City. Nice of you to be with us today.
Thank you.
So is that the extent of this new bill?
Correct. The governor signed it back in March, and it went into effect immediately. And it's for people who don't have a Social Security card or a Social Security number. They cannot get a Utah driver's license or ID.
And who were the proponents of this legislation?
Well, the supporter of the bill was Senator Curtis Bramble of Provo in Utah, but it was, I guess, a highly Republican, supported by mostly Republicans.
And
the House and the Senate.
And did it pass overwhelmingly or narrowly or what?
In the Senate, it passed in a 20-8 vote. In the House, a 53-18 vote.
So it seems like a pretty popular measure.
Correct.
Is this seen as a burden on the Department of Motor Vehicles there in the state of Utah that they're now required to figure out who's legal and who isn't?
Well, they're actually they're not required to find out who's legal or who's not legal. They're only concern is whether or not you have a Social Security card.
Well, as we heard, we were speaking earlier with Congressman David Dreyer. I'm not sure you were listening at that point, but he was talking in his proposal for a new, more difficult to forge a Social Security card. The problem being that it's not all that difficult to get a Social Security card.
Well, that issue hasn't come up. I mean, of course, there's issues that people will be getting fake drivers, like more fake driver's license now. People say people will get more fake IDs, but there are just opponents of any kind of documentation for undocumented immigrants. Some say that it's just breaking federal law by allowing people to drive in Utah, that it's a privilege and shouldn't be open to undocumented residents.
How is this going to change the lives of illegal immigrants in your state?
As far as people who are undocumented, they will still be able to get the driving privilege card. And we do have about 100,000 undocumented immigrants who at this time have a Utah driver's license or ID card, and they're going to have to trade those in for a driving privilege card. It will be accepted at banks, check cashing shops, some stores where they can use the ID if they're cashing a check or using a credit card for a purchase, but they cannot use it, and the card specifically says they cannot use it at any Utah government agency, which means that they can't use it at a state liquor store because the state here in Utah is in charge of those. And
mm-hmm.
Now, about 2 weeks ago, the TSA officials have said that they will not allow for them to be used at airports as well as the primary source of
identification.
Of ID.
Yeah.
Correct.
Jennifer Sanchez, thanks very much. Jennifer Sanchez, a reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune, was kind enough to join us by phone from her office in Salt Lake City. And again, this argument over documentation is going on in Utah at the congressional level. Obviously, there was a big issue in California as well, Seth.
It's an issue nationwide, and the fact is that Social Security cards are easily, it's pretty easy to get one. I was recently in a town in rural North Carolina. The going rate was about $1,000. The drafters of that 1986 immigration overhaul bill never foresee the rise of desktop publishing. And what's that? What that meant is it's just pretty easy for anyone to get a Social Security card.
Let's get another caller up on this question. Veronica. Veronica is with us from San Antonio, Texas.
Thank you, Neil. I think that I don't like amnesty because I don't believe in making undocumented workers citizens. However, I believe that we need to find some way to document them because my husband and I are both Mexican Americans. I'm fourth generation. He's second generation. We are contractors. We own our own business. We consider ourselves to be law-abiding citizens, and we feel guilty for having to hire undocumented workers. Additionally, I wanted to make a comment about earlier, they are paid no less than minimum wage. In fact, they're paid at the federal Davis-Bacon wage rates. They're mm-hmm. paid very, very well. So just because they're not documented doesn't mean they get abused. Additionally, I wanted to make a comment about security. My husband looks... He's Hispanic. He's Mexican. He's second generation here. He looks Arab. So there's a whole thing of security and how Mexicans and Arabs tend to look very similar and how that whole Arab person could just mesh in right with the Mexican race in America. Also, I don't like the fact that Mexicans come and they deplete our services from schools and hospitals and, you know, just all kinds of services that we offer, yet they contribute nothing. And that's really what we believe. We believe something needs to happen. They should not be citizens, but they need to be documented in some way so that we can reduce security risks, so that we can tax them some way or have them pay some fee so they're not just depleting the system.
Well, don't you withhold their Social Security taxes?
We don't hire as employees. We have to hire them as contract laborers. So it's just we don't like having to be sneaky about it. We wish we could just hire them, take out their taxes, cover them in terms of workers' comp insurance. They're not covered in workers' comp. We make them sign waivers, and they're day laborers in essence, and they've been with us for years.
Well, with respect, Veronica, as an employer, you're breaking the law as well by hiring them.
I am breaking the law, and it's one of those things we cannot afford to pay what people won't do. It's not that we can't afford. We're paying the wages that the federal government says we should pay an employee. Davis-Bacon Wage Act say how you have to pay them, and we pay them those rates, but no Americans want to do this work.
Veronica raises a number of important issues.
Well, I think her concerns, you see that in public opinion polls, there's a lot of resentment, particularly at the low end of the wage scale. People say that they're taking our jobs, they're taking our place in the line at the hospital, our students, our kids' classrooms are getting more crowded. As far as, though, whether they're a benefit or a cost, there's a mismatch in that the benefit accrues mainly to the federal government. They're paying Social Security payroll taxes, though, into fake accounts, so they would never be the beneficiaries down the line. But the costs are borne largely by the states. They come, they're largely young, they have children, so the cost of education, of health care, those are all borne by the state, and the state isn't seeing the revenue. So there's a real mismatch who pays and who benefits.
Veronica, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Seth, appreciate your time today as well.
Thank you.
Seth Stern is a reporter for Congressional Quarterly who's been following immigration issues, and he joined us here in Studio 3A.